This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
President's Day savings are happening now at the Home Depot with up to 40% off select appliances. Looking to upgrade your fridge? Check out LG's newest model, serving up ice in all kinds of styles. Cube, crushed, craft ice, and now new mini craft ice straight from the dispenser. From cold brew to fizzy favorites, these refrigerators will have you entertaining like a pro. Shop President's Day savings and get up to 40% off, plus free delivery on select appliances like LG at the Home Depot. Free delivery on appliance purchases of $1,498 or more. Offer valid February 5th through the 25th. U.S. only. See store online for details.
Hey guys, before we start, a quick shout out to Alpha Dog Nutrition for sponsoring this podcast. Alpha Dog products are now available at dusupply.com, and you can use code ALPHADOG15 at checkout for 15% off and a credit for free shipping to try it yourself. Now let's get you to your podcast.
Welcome to my podcast, where we're going to talk about a lifestyle with dogs and threw in a few life lessons along the way. Whether you're a hound hunter, bird dog enthusiast, running setters, pointers, retrievers, or a flat-out running dog junkie, this podcast is for you. I am your host, Heath Hyatt, a certified law enforcement canine trainer with over 3 decades of personal and professional training and handling experience. It's time for me to pay it forward. So grab your leads, lace up those boots, and come and join me on this lifelong process of teaching, training, and learning. Are you looking to unlock your dog's full potential and give them the best nutrition possible for peak performance? Then look no further. Anookshuk has what you're looking for. Anookshuk's nutrient-dense formulas are crafted to keep your dog's energy high and performance top-notch. Packed with premium proteins and essential fats, Anookshuk delivers the balanced nutrition your dog needs to thrive. From hunting dogs to police canines, Anookshuk is trusted by professionals. Give your dog the power of peak performance with Anookshuk Professional Dog Food. You should see a recorder. You see a recording button? All right.
Yep.
Welcome back, friends, to another episode of What's Up Wednesday, where we're going to get all of our canine training know-how. But today, I'm actually flipping my shirt up and down because I'm roasting. I mean, I've literally got water dripping off my back. It's so hot. And it's like 80 some degrees here. But yeah, today we're going to do a little bit of different than training. We're just going to talk about different styles. And I've got on Eric Roden from Sweden. And Eric and I have chatted back and forth through social media for some time now, actually. I don't know when our first conversation happened, but Eric is a fellow podcaster. He runs the Nordic Tales and American Trails podcast. I have actually listened to that several times. We've actually had some of his guests on. Daryl Petty, we had him on, it's been a while back. And Daryl's running Leica's. This is all tying in together. And, of course, everybody knows Alex. Alex runs the Leica's. And you've actually had Wayne Dixon on.
Yes.
Yeah, so Wayne, we sit on the board for the American Bear Foundation. Wayne literally lives like just 20 minutes down the road. We talk quite a bit about dogs and training and, you know, something I think the hounds guys should be more, they should be more open-minded, because just because it's not a hound, and Wayne and I have this, we've had this conversation, like, it's your sport, you know, whether you deer hunt with a muzzleloader, a bow or a rifle or a crossbow, whether you, you know, turkey hunt, whatever it is, whatever sport or whatever game you decide to pursue, you know, it doesn't matter as long as you're doing what you love to do. And Wayne and I have talked several times, because Wayne has, you know, some Leicas. They're very young and they're doing a really good job for their age. It's a different style. We talk about that consistently, you know. What drives me with the hounds is the story they tell. And that's the trailing. And, you know, they're going in and out of country, and they tell that story. And that's what has drawn me to the hound side of it. But, the you know, with the Leicas and the Spitz, I know you're going to talk about that. You know, you can hunt areas I can't hunt, because my dog's going to bust them out of there. Like, you know, we're not going to be able to hunt a 200 acre plot of ground. Like, it just, very seldom would you ever catch a bear on that 200 acres, you know, where you guys can go in and, you know, hunt that land out. Very, you know, probably chances are you're going to catch it pretty quick, and it's not going to run off of that property. So, you know, it's just another tool that we use. I mean, it's no different than, like I said, using a muzzleloader and a bow or a rifle. You know, we choose to use hounds. You guys choose to use the Leica, and it's all good. Like, it's all good, man. Support each other, you know, be happy for each other, and it all works out. So, Eric, just do a little bit of rundown of you. What do you do? I know that we're going to get into the hunting styles and stuff here in a little bit, but yeah, just give everybody a rundown in case they hadn't heard you.
Yeah. So, Eric Rodin, I'm living in middle south of Sweden. I have two Russian European Leicas. So for anyone that isn't very diving into the Leicas, in America, with both what Wayne runs and Darren Petty and Alex Kureshev runs, they use West Siberian Leicas. And I have two Russian European Leicas, which would be like, if you're not aware of the Spitz, like, it would be like a smaller Karelian beer dog. Mm-hmm. If you put them place side to side, like, people will mostly likely say it's a Karelian beer dog. And then I have a young female West Siberian Leica as well. So I currently have three Leicas, and I had four, but yeah, removed one here this winter, so down to three now. I mainly hunt moose, wild boar, and then some predators with the badgers, lynx, and brown bears here in Sweden. But I also hunt capercaillie and black grouse with my dogs. So, like, a capercaillie would be like a turkey in size. Mm-hmm. And the black grouse would be same size as your grouse, but a different subspecies.
Let me tell you a story about a moose. So, one of the guys that I used to hunt with, old Lance Hutton, and that's where I got my foundation stock of bear hounds, was up in Maine. and his whole pack run a moose. And he called them off, which we don't want ours running, you know. We don't want ours running that. He called them off, and he goes, yeah, and when I get home, I'll break them from that. We don't have no moose to run. So when they got home, they've never run a moose again. But that's kind of funny. We always laugh. In fact, I just had that conversation with Pappy yesterday. We were laughing and joking about it. But he said, I'll break them when I get home. So, but now, Eric, you're hunting, like, just do a quick rundown. Like, you guys have to go out if somebody's on the hunt. There's only so many of you guys licensed to, I guess licensed is the word to use, that actually can track down game or go after game in your area, correct?
Yeah, so to run down the whole hunting style here, like, everything here is private land. There is no public land at all. So it's all similar to, I know some areas in West Virginia where you have leases, and obviously on other states as well. So you have a lease, and a normal lease here would be, I would say in my area, from 4 to 8,000 acres. And on that lease, you will most likely be 8 to 10 shooters, which would basically be shooters in stands or on the ground. And then you're going to have 2, maybe 3 dog handlers, which will have, in this case, if we're talking moose hunting, 99% of the time baying Spitz breeds. So you would have your 3 Leica breeds, Karelian Bear Dog, Swedish Moose Dog, or Swedish Elk Hound, Norwegian Elk Hound. And then we have some small subspecies here as well. So we have 9 different moose breeds, all working similarly. The goal is to bay up the game. But yeah, we have some... From our point of view, there's no really strict regulations, but if you compare to America, like, we're only allowed to ever use 2 dogs per game. So 99% of all the hunting we do is with solo dogs. You're never allowed to use any form of engine to help you out, so you can't be in a car, you can't use an e-bike, everything is walking. So if a dog ranges out too far and you have to go pick it up, then basically that's your hunt, right? You can't rejoin the hunt after that. You have to, like, make a clear ending of the hunt before you can let your dog loose again. So there's no, you can't hunt from roads or anything like that here. A big difference that I haven't even thought about before starting our podcast, the podcast I host is with Adam Booth, who's from Louisiana, who also hunts West Siberian Leicas, is that we can't legally use e-collars, right? So you talked about breaking off a dog from running a moose. Like, I think on average, we spend a lot more time trying to get our dogs to not chase the wrong game when it both comes to breeding and how you train your young dogs up. Because obviously, as we can only use 2 dogs maximum, like, I don't know anyone here that would train a moose dog or a wild boar dog with the older dog. Like, you will only train the young dog by itself. If you compare it to like the normal bear hound way of having a few starter dogs and then you bring in your young dogs in it. So I think it's definitely brings a bit more challenge to get young dogs really working well. And I think that's partially also why we're very, very more strict on the breeding systems we have, with basically mandatory hunting trials, dog shows, and plenty of health tests. I think that's like the part of the reason, like, it's you rely on one dog 99% of the time.
So let me ask you, you said that when y'all go out on a moose hunt that you've got 2 or 3, 4 dog handlers. So yeah. Let's just say there's 3 of you and all 3 of you have 2 dogs, that's 6 dogs. Are you are just taking 1 dog a piece?
Yeah, 1 dog a piece. So I would normally run one dog in the morning and then 1 after lunch.
I got you. Now, are you allowed to hunt those together? Can all 3 of you turn a dog loose together?
Yes, but not on the same animal. So you never want your dog to be what we would call like a bark catcher or a bark teeth. Like mm-hmm. you never want your dog to chase another dog's bark. That's like a big no-no.
Mm-hmm. And your guys, and your guys too, y'all are not allowed to touch the game. Like, you know, a lot of our hound hunt, especially your big game. I don't know about the line hunters because I can't speak for them because I don't know enough about, you know, being right in the thick of it. But, you know, we like most bear hunters like the dog to put a little pressure on him, make him go up.
Yep.
You know, the hog hunters, I feel, you know, they like a dog to work a hog really well. So you guys are not allowed to touch them.
No.
Which is another, I would say, a very, very deep genetic, rooted genetic thing that you have to look at.
Yeah, and that's, if you want to go into the nitty-picks with the Laikas, right? So the Laikas comes from Russia, mm-hmm. from the Siberian. And they're more lean towards the gritty style. Like, they're fully okay with the Laika biting and holding down a wild boar. While here, that's totally illegal. Like, a dog are never allowed to engage an unwounded mm-hmm. game. So what we breed for is we want our dogs to be on average fast, right? You mm-hmm. to get in front of the game and basically circle around the game and then bark in the face of it. And that's like this grittiness that we want, like get in front of the animal, bark in its face to make it stop. Compared to like a little bit of a love bite in the butt to make it turn around and stop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that definitely like, it's a challenge, especially I think moose isn't that tricky, right? Because I mean, even a solo wolf will be alert and not be too close to a moose with the kicks and all that. Uh-huh. So like, there's not that many dogs that even tries to engage on a moose. So that's more easily avoided, I would say. But when it comes to wild boars, that's maybe stops in the thickets. Mm-hmm. Especially if you have smaller pigs that the dog easily could catch, that's when the struggle comes in. And then if you have a dog that actually then engaged, then you just have to put the mouth collar on that dog so it can't get a hold of the game.
So you're basically putting a muzzle on them?
Yep.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah, I mean, that's a whole different level of that's a whole different level of training, you know. For our guys, like, we don't even have to think about that. If the dog's, you know, got a little, and I will use the term grit, even though
yep.
my definition's a little different, but you know, when you use the term grit, like, you know, they'll pull fur. That's what people
yep.
usually
yep.
associate it with. Yeah, like, we don't even have to think about that. Like,
no.
Most of the time, now I'm like you, I prefer my dog stay back. Like, I'm not one of the people that my dog has to be in there, you know, pulling fur. I don't care for that. I don't like paying vet bills. I don't like my dog's hurt. As long as my dog stay in bay, I'm good. My expectations are met. So, you know, a lot of people have a little bit more expectation with that, where they want them, you know, want them pulling. Now, I have two dogs in my pack that will work a bear a little more than I would care for. My old female, she gets in the face of the bear, and I do not like that, because when she gets up in the face, she just gets closer and closer, and then she gets rolled, or, you know, she gets pulled in, and then she ends up with holes or cuts, and I don't like that. My male dog, he'll stay in behind, and he will not make a move on that bear until that bear's turning and going away. And then he'll nip, and when that bear spins, he spins with it, nip. And, I mean, it's really interesting to watch. I mean, he works a bear actually like a cattle dog, the way he works, which that's what I prefer. So, yeah, I got two that a little bit more than I care for, but it is what it is. I don't have to worry about what you guys do.
Yeah. So with the podcast we started, right, when you start talking with hound guys or dog persons across the world, like, it's so funny how the culture change. And from an European point of view or a Swedish point of view towards America, like, even from, in your cases, like, from state to state, you can really tell that, like, what's norm or the culture is very, very different state to state as well.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think it definitely puts a lot of more. So obviously, like, we only hunt solo dogs. The only game you would hunt here in a similar style would actually be brown bears.
Mm-hmm.
Would be normal here would be having a hound that is well working, and then you start a younger hound with that old seasoned dog on brown bear. And we do have a few plot hounds, and they work very, very, very good on our brown bears as well. I think our plot stocks come from Steve Moore in BC. Mm-hmm. I know he's passed away, and then there's a few breeders that have sent a few dogs this way. So I think we're maybe 200-300 plot hounds now in Sweden and Norway together. But that's like the only style of hunting a game here with dogs that people will start a young dog with an old dog. Otherwise, it's always starting basically from 8 weeks old. So what I would do with my Laikas, because my Laikas, both my Russian European and West Siberian Laikas, are fast and not legal to run the roe deer or fallow deers. So what I would do is do a hoof track with the moose or wild boar,
mm-hmm.
and maybe do 40 yards when they're young, even maybe shorter. And then I would just drag a roe deer hoof diagonally across it and never reward anything. Like, I'm going to put them on the track for the moose, and then maybe after 20 yards, it's going to be a roe deer scent going across it, but there's never going to be any reward. I'm letting the dog following it, but it's never going to find any reward. And then 99% of the time, they just circle back to the moose scent and follow that for another 15 yards and find the hoof. And then you're super excited. And that's how I start my young dogs to, like, learn that roe deer scent is never worth chasing.
I've got some good friends from Holland that come over and do seminars and stuff for me, and, you know, they're in the same situation. They're not using the e-collars and they're not allowed to, and their whole training style is different than ours. You know, I feel like the e-collar a lot of times shortcuts the process, and it's an easy way out. Instead of, like, you're learning the behavior, you're learning how to fix the behavior permanently, instead of just, So, and I think one of the things that I've picked up from my law enforcement side of training is I have learned that the e-collar is a good tool for me, but most people overuse it. Like, there's other ways to do this. And if you do it the proper way, a lot of times you don't even need the e-collar. So I completely understand that. And, you know, it does bring your training to a whole new level for me.
Yeah. And I think, like, so on the Garmin's, right, we still use Garmin devices, same, they're just called differently. We still have the tone, or like the beep. The problem is, we can, obviously, I try to train my dogs on the beep because, mm-hmm. I mean, like here, I know, if we're looking at America, like squirrel hunting, which would be where the most of the Laikas is actually used in America right now, then you have Alex, who's been very successful on black bears for the last 5-6 years.
Mm-hmm.
So that's growing in popularity as well. But like a Laika, if you ask an average American hunter, doesn't really range out. But I mean, my Laikas will range out. I prefer them to be 500 to 1,000 yards out in circles around me. I expect them to chase 2-3 miles once they actually find a good scent and hopefully jump a game. I want them to bay for at least 3 to 6 hours. I want to be able to push the game so if the game moves a bit, and then I want the dog to be able to rebay it. So our Spitz dogs are on average very, very more independent in that sense. And then we have like Swedish Alkhounds in Swedish called Jämthund, which is more like a Darren Petty, who was here in September, we hunted with one of those. It's like you let that dog go and you won't see it for 24 hours if you don't shoot the moose. It's like it's gone. So that's why I have Laikas here, because they're more hunting with me than some of our other speed breeds. But obviously the tone helps. The problem, or in this case, like the, I don't have the e-collar to like, if they ignore the tone, I can't really do anything more. They're like, okay, nothing else happened. So I can see the benefit of having the e-collar. I mean, if we're getting close to dangerous road, dangerous rivers, bad ice, anything like that, when you really, really, really need a dog to like stop what you're doing and turn around. And I think the e-collar as a tool, as all tools, me and Darren talked a lot about this, like it's a good tool, but if you overuse it to take shortcuts, it can be a bad tool as well. But I mean, you can use a fork as a bad tool as well. So that doesn't mean the e-collar in fact is actually bad. In fact, if you're hunting in Norway, you have to do like an e-collar course with your dog towards sheep and reindeer, because they have free-ranging sheep and reindeer. So if you're ever going in the locations where they have Sami people or sheep farmers, then you basically have to have a paper that your dogs will not chase sheep or reindeer.
Yeah, so I want to go back to the plot dog real quick.
Yep.
Because the plot dog is known for its tenacity and for its, you know, the stamina and the drive. And most of the hunters that I know that have them, their dogs are pretty gritty.
Yep.
So how does that translate over to you guys? Are they muzzling those dogs? Are they, how are they keeping those dogs off the game? Because genetically, that's what they do.
Yeah. There are definitely plot hounds here that are too gritty for our standards, and those dogs will most likely only be used once the game is wounded. So our hunting regulations is very strict in that sense until a game is wounded. As soon as a game is wounded, all bets are off. Like then it moves from hunting to like making sure the animal suffers as little as possible. So then you're allowed to use cars, you're allowed to use more dogs, you're allowed to have good dogs that catch and hold. This also applies to if you hit a road deer or a moose here with a car, you have to call the police, and then the police is going to call out traffic hunter to recover that hit animal to make sure the animal isn't suffering. So there are definitely plot hounds here that are too gritty that people only will only use once a bear is actually not hit well. But I also think, so I don't have super much experience of hunting with the plot hounds, so I don't want to speak for all of them, obviously. But as we only hunt with one or two, I feel with the brown bears as well, even if the dog is gritty, it tends to end up dead or learn very fast.
Yeah.
It doesn't help to be this gritty. Because I think, I'm sure if you take my Laikas, and I would throw all my three Laikas out, or even, let's say I go with a friend and we throw out six Laikas, I'm sure my dogs will engage as well. But because the fact that we only have one or two dogs, and I think this is, as an American hound guy, I think if you have three or four dogs on a chase and then four or five more joins in, like all the dog pack gets more brave. Like they boost each other's cockiness or self-esteem. So I think that helps that people only use one or two. of them. But there's definitely plot hounds here that is too greedy. But on average, I actually don't hear that much that like it's a big problem, because truth be told, like the brown bear is a bit more, it would be more like a grizzly, or it is even a grizzly in that sense. And they obviously don't tree.
Right. They're baying.
Yeah. They're baying. So I think that helps. I think if you take Swedish bloodhounds to America on black bears, they're going to probably bite as well. So I think it's genetics and what they're chasing as well.
Yeah. I kind of wondered that, and I know that I had something right on top of my head that I was going to say, and now I don't remember. Anyway, yeah, so I like, oh, that's what I was going to talk about, you know, the pack size real quick, and then I want to get into the conversation that you and I actually had about the treeing.
Oh, yeah.
So the perfect pack size for me is 4 hounds. If you can't catch game with 4 hounds, you really need to reconsider your pack. And that's just the way it is. But I carry 6 dogs because I usually have a couple young dogs with me. You know, I've got some 2-year-olds. And I mean, anywhere else, and I'll explain this just so everybody understands my point of view. If I was hunting where I could hunt year-round, Virginia does not allow that. At 2 years old, 2.5 years old, I've got a finished dog. Well, Virginia does not allow me to hunt but 90 days out of the whole year. And out of those 90 days, you've got family obligations. You've got, if you've got kids and you've got work, you know, you're only probably hunting 60 of those days. And that's if you've got weather, good weather for 60 days. And when I say weather, I mean ice and sleet, stuff that just tear the dog's feet and stuff up. So you're really not even getting to hunt 60 days. So I say my 2-year-olds are still young dogs. They're not, my dogs are not finished at 2. So I carry those, you know, I'll have a young dog or two with me, but 4 dogs is a plenty. Like 4 dogs is, you know, perfect size, I think. So, and I know that there have been 2 or 3 famous people actually quote that and say that. And I truly believe it. I've caught just as many bear with 1 or 2 dogs solo or double than I have with the pack of 6 that I'm running now. There's no really big difference. And you said it. The more dogs you start adding into that equation, the feistier they get. And then, oh, I've got backup here, so I'm going to run in there and grab a hold of something. And then next thing you know, you've got 3 grabbing a hold. And then the next thing you go, you got 3 getting slung around everywhere because you got too many in there. So I feel that way myself.
Yeah, and I also think, I know you want to move on to the treeing part. I think this might be it. But like, so here, if we're talking both, now brown bears and wild boars, they really, 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 really like thick stuff, right? So shooting range on that isn't really going to be that far. We're talking from 3 yards to 60 yards. But as we also have shooters on stands, like it's not uncommon. I'm not sure if your listeners have looked at like wild boar fevers on YouTube, but like driven hunt styles where you have wild boar running around with dogs chasing, and then there's shooters. You're shooting on running game a lot more here than I think in America at all. But I mean, on a bay up on a moose, it's not uncommon to shoot at 150 yards.
But there's only one dog there.
But there's only one dog. So you make sure you know where your dog is. You want your dog preferably to always be in front of the game. So then you locate that your dog is maybe 8-10 yards in front of the moose. And then you make sure you have safe shot placement, basically. But so it, in some sense, it would be tricky here to have more dogs as well, because none of our games actually trees. You like, it's only gonna be bait up shots or running shots.
Well, then how did we get on? Let's just segue into that. How did we get on the topic of So let me just give you the backstory so I can everybody understands the conversation we had as we roll into it. I had posted a picture of Trip, one of the dogs that I raised, and Trip had his feet, I mean, super glued to the tree, head up, like, you know, in the American terms, like tree dog, like that. It was a perfect picture, like feet up, he stretched out, head back, mouth open, you know, he was treeing. And Eric had texted me and like, you know, what is it with this? And I don't remember the exact wordage, but that's what it was.
Yeah. So you posted the picture of a dog having the paws on a tree, right? Mm-hmm. And this is from a European or Swedish point of view. Like, I'm hanging a lot on social media from American now, especially mm-hmm. with a podcast, right? Because I'm one of those guys. Even if we hunt different style, we hunt different grains, we use different dogs, I think we can all learn from each other. It doesn't matter if I'm running Leicas or Spitzbreeds or someone is running Plot Hounds or Terriers or whatever you're running for dogs. Like, we can always learn from each other. But like, I've never really understood the whole ideal picture of a dog with a paws on a tree from my point of view, because all our hunting trials for our tree game with B-Squirrel, Black Grouse and Capercaillie, your dogs will get point deduction if your dog ever put paws on a tree. We want the dog to like calmly sit back, eyes locked on the game, and bark. Now, I've talked a lot with both you and other American hunters about this. I think partially for our style or size of it is, on average, we definitely have some, not as high trees, not as sturdy trees. We have spruce and pine mainly. So if the dog would go up to the tree, they will also lose sight of the game they're barking at because the canopy cover is going to be too thick. And I think our trees are a bit more windy, like easily moved by the paws. But it's definitely one of those cases there. Even if you're looking at the West Siberian Leicas now in America, which is present, majority of them will put paws on the tree as well. And here it would be like, as a dog, it will definitely be viewed down. But as a dog handler or a dog owner, like, you're going to be the laughing stock of that hunt. Like, why have you not trained your dog properly to not put paws on the tree? Like, what are you doing? And yeah. I think that's one of those cultural things that, like, I can understand our view of it because, I mean, if we're talking black grouse or Capercaillie, they're birds. If mm-hmm. if that tree moves too much, they're flying off. And that dog is going to have a hard time to relocate it. That's just the matter of the game with those. And squirrels, we feel timber more easily when the tree is moving as well. So that's like our reasoning behind it, I think, why that's not viewed as a positive thing here.
Yeah, and I, you know, my part of that conversation was, yeah, like for us, and I know this for my young dog, well, they're not young anymore, but when I was training Spook and Kate, they were catching bear pretty consistently, but they would not tree, you know, per se. So they would be circling. You could see them on the Garmin, circling. And the next thing you know, you're halfway to where they're at because you know they're treed there. And then they'd be on a race again. And where they weren't treeing, and I know it's just a little different, they weren't keeping the game up. The game was coming down and boom, and running off. And that was definitely an issue for me. I ended up buying an older dog that would stay treed, and then they kind of come around. But to this day, and I actually had this conversation with a guy yesterday, the line of dogs that I'm running, if there's not a crowd at the tree, my male dog will be up on the tree. If there is a crowd of dogs at the tree, he will be sitting back off of it. My female, you're never going to see her on the tree. She sits back off of it. My younger dogs that's out of them, I've crossed over to some really good coon dog and that are, you know, that were tree dogs through their generation. Now, those dogs will get up on the tree. So me, preferably, especially hunting in a pack, and then, you know, you may have, like I said, 5, 6, 10 dogs there, and you may have somebody's dogs that come in from somewhere else and actually get together. I don't want my dogs in a mess, and I would prefer my dogs to stand back 2 or 3 or 4 foot or whatever. And depending on the land, the landscape, like we, you know, we tree on some really steep stuff a lot of times. My dogs will be sitting 30 yards back, a couple of them. They'll be 30 yards back up the hill, just like what you're saying, literally looking at the right into the face of the bear. So I guess it's a preference, and I maybe people get too torqued up about the actual, you know, being up on the tree. And when I was coon hunting, that was the cool thing. And for some of the competition stuff, you know, you've got to be able to say my dog was at this tree. So that kind of slides some of that in there of, you know, being on the tree. There's no question that dog's face planted on that tree. Okay, this is the tree that we're in, and, you know, you start shining it. So, yeah, you're probably right. It's just, you know, North America versus Europe stuff. And, again, if I was just hunting, you know, two dogs and I was by myself all the time, I wouldn't really care, honestly.
Yeah, and I think it comes down to, like, obviously it's going to be preference, and but also what game you have. Like, so if we're taking our Nordic Europe owns breed, like from Sweden and Norway, you're going to have Norwegian Alkhound and Swedish Alkhounds. They're very, very, very bad at treeing game, right? Because they're only basically being bred on moose, like for 150, 500 years. So if we're hunting lynx, those breeds will hunt as good as a laika. But as soon as the cat trees, you're going to get exactly that. Just circling around the tree and not even barking, because like the scent goes away up. And they're not really bred to look up a tree, while the laikas is also bred to hunt birds, which is obviously up in trees. So obviously it's a lot of both breeds, but like genetics within breeds as well. You're going to have laikas here that breed trees a lot better than others. But your coon hunting trials want the dogs to put paws up. And then you're most likely going to end up with dogs that, because in the end, people want to do good on competition if you're into that. Same here. If you're into hunting trials, you want a dog to perform to how the hunting trial is currently ridden. And then you breed towards that goal as well.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yep, I hear.
Yeah, it's been that whole segment was really, really choppy. Choppy. I think it's just preference, like I said. And, you know, my style has really changed over the last, especially over the last decade. You know, 20 years ago, I felt completely different. And I think that evolves as you learn and you grow as a handler or trainer or whatever it is you consider yourself. Like, the things that I thought I needed 20 years ago, I don't feel that way. Like I'm not as rigid, you know, set in my ways with things. Like I'm open to a little bit of difference, and I see benefits from different things now, where then this is the way I was taught. This is the way I'm doing it. This is it. But now I don't, like I said, I'm definitely not that way anymore.
Yeah, and like I was brought up in some really, so I grew up in a family that wasn't into hunting, but I grew up with neighbors and family friends around that had dogs. So I basically started tagging along since I was like 10, 11 with different moose dog handlers. And like here, the moose is like king. I would say like moose hunting here is like whitetail hunting in, or elk hunting in America. Those days. Like, basically, if you go up north during moose week, so you have the moose season starts in September up north, like you're gonna have whole towns that like all the car shop is closed, the gas station is basically open 3 hours before shooting light, and then 3 hours after shooting light during the hunting hours, it's closed. It's a very strong cultural thing where basically a whole village still goes out together to hunt. So like moose is, if you're talking with a Swedish hunter, like not everyone, but like 98% is going to hunt moose. Then there's going to be different level if they only do it for the opening week or if they do it for the whole season. But growing up, there were some strict things that I'm like, I was taught to never, never start a young dog with an old dog. Like that was like heresy. Like you never do that. Now I would view that as like almost the last resort. Like if I have a 2.5 year old that hasn't really, really gotten the hang of it, then if I find a good moose that one of my older dogs bay up, then I might considering adding my young dog to that bay and then hopefully recall my old dog, let the young dog stay for an hour baying by himself, and then hopefully if all stars align, be able to shoot it. If I would tell the old timers that brought me up into the hunting world, I would considering that, they would probably like never hunt with me again.
They'd disband you, wouldn't they?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's definitely interesting. And I think so I was in America hunting black bears in Virginia and Tennessee.
Back
in, 2023. I always mess that up. It's hard to say 13 and 23 for some reason for me. But I hunted black bears with Alex, with his West Siberian Laikas. And something I learned after that was that we obviously hunted very similar to how we would do here. The dogs will find the track, bay up slash tree the bear in this case. And as soon as you spot it in a tree and you get a good safe shot, you shoot it.
Mm-hmm.
There's as soon as you have a safe clear shot on 50, 60, 80, 100 yards, like then you take the shot and you shoot it. The bears drops down dead and there's nothing more to it. And then you talk with hound guys, it's like, did you not tie back your dogs? Mm-hmm. Like the first time someone told me that, I was like, why the peep would you even I've never considered that to even be remotely something you have to think about.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it would be a fight. Like, it would be a fight. Now, I think we talked about that earlier. Like, and, you know, the hound guys are so worried about their, you know, dog, a bear falling out. And, you know, I'll give you a prime example. And we had dogs tied back. Like, we had dogs tied back. We shot a bear out of a huge poplar tree. And we misguessed his weight, like, tremendously. Like, I'm telling you, like, it was bad. We was in... It's 160 to 200 range, and when that scoundrel hit the ground, he growed a lot. But anyway, when he hit the ground, he bounced and rolled, and he ended up rolling over two dogs. This bear weighed 410 pounds. And, you know, we had another incident where a miscommunication, here we go, miscommunication. We were tying dogs back, and we had a guy with us, and we was like, you know, if it starts to come down, go ahead and shoot it. Well, it just spun around in the tree. It wasn't coming down, but he didn't know. He'd never been on a bear hunt. So when that thing spun around, man, he plastered it and it fell. And when it fell, it was all we could do to get out of the way. And, man, I mean, it caused a little bit of a heartache there. And then, you know, this past year, if you kept up with it, we had a gentleman in Lunenburg County that actually, same thing happened, miscommunication, they shot, the bear fell on him and killed him.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I will say that I would be very uncomfortable shooting a bear out from that distance with my 4, 5, 6 dogs under the tree, because my dogs are going to, and I think this is a part of it too, Eric, my dogs are going to try to grab that bear.
Yep.
Because they know that the gunshot, they know gunshot means dead animal, and we always know that doesn't mean it's dead, right?
Nope.
And they're going to try to grab it or whatever, fallen or whatever. And it would be scary for me. But now you guys, where your dogs are not allowed to touch them.
Yep.
I feel like the dog will be like, oh, okay, hold back. You know, so maybe it's a training style too. Like, if our dogs are not allowed to touch the animal, you're probably right. It probably wouldn't even be an issue. Like, we wouldn't even have this conversation. It'd be like, all the dogs kind of scatter, the bear hits the ground, and everything's good. So, I think that's a major point there.
And that's what happened with Alex's dogs, right? When we shot the bear, like, they moved back once it hit the ground, and they noticed it was dead, and they started pulling hair. Because Alex dogs hunt a bit more gritty, if you want to use that term. Don't think it's the perfect term for it, but I think people understand. Like, their Alex dog will definitely grab the bear's ass to make it tree fast. And I mean, on my trip, I was 10 days. We were two hunting days in Tennessee and four hunting days in Virginia. And we were successful in that sense that we got a few bears. But like, we had very, very short races. Like, and I think that's the big benefit of these baying breeds that we have for black bears in general, is that they're always obviously silent on track, and they're going to jump scare the game a lot more. Like, here we judge a dog, like, preferably you never want a game to move more than 100 yards from, like, the first bay up. We don't really use strike as a term. We don't really have a good English word for how we but I think a strike. So as soon as the dog finds a moose or wild boar or brown bear, like, you don't want the game to move more than 100 yards before it's, like, stuck into a ground bay up. And preferably you want the dog to, like, hold that game there for until you get there, basically.
Yeah, you know, even though we don't run that same style, I know through years of experience, if my dogs are just out hunting and they blow up and fall treed, they've jumped that animal right out of the bed.
Yep.
Surprised it, and the bear run up the first tree. There was no race. So I know exactly what happened. I also know that in the colder months, that if my dogs trail, a lot of times, if they're not being mouthy, like, you know, I've had dogs that bark every time the foot hits the ground, and I've got dogs that drift tracks and everything else, but those dogs will trail, and all of a sudden they jump, and then 200 yards they're treed. I know that bear was surprised too. He's laid down, he's got stiff, he's not been moving, and then it shortens the race. So I know, even though I'm hunting a different style of dog, I also know the behavior, and the same thing your guys are doing is an element of surprise, and bam, the bear goes up. So there's not much of a race to it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's the big, I know there's a few guys in America outside, like Wayne Dixon, as you talked about, who's with you in American Bear Foundation, also runs to Westy Bear and Like Us now. But, like, there's also guys that have added in both Karelian bear dogs and Westy Bear and Like Us within their hound packs to have that, like, stopping power or it factor, or how you on races that never really gonna end. I think it's definitely, it's beneficial for both sides, I think, to at least talk with each other.
So let me ask you a question, and then we'll end this. So I know that there's a couple guys that are running hounds that have added the Likas to their pack. Okay.
Yep.
Are those Likas, and I haven't had a chance to talk to them about it, so that's why I'm asking you, no better person to ask than you. Are those dogs going to make the 10-mile races that our dogs may or may not end up with? Or is that something they put that dog in at the end of it? Or, if they have an opportunity to put the dog in when it crosses a road or crosses a path or whatever they're doing, and that helps shorten the race.
I can't speak for anyone, right? But I would use it to, like, cut with your rules that you can drive around, right? And cut, maybe throw it in when it crosses a road or something like that to shorten the race. Mm-hmm. Now, with that said, I mean, our speed breeds will run 10 miles with a moose, no questions asked. Mm-hmm. But I think the biggest it factor for like black bear, if you're using both hounds and spitz, would probably be like throwing in a dog that's super fast to catch up, most likely get in front of the hounds and then mm-hmm. hopefully make the bear stop. And then as soon as the bear stops on that, like or Karelian bear dog, then all the hounds basically gets there as well. And then it's most likely going to tree faster. I think that's the, because if we look, I don't want to derail too much, but the brown bears here, the reasoning plot hounds or hounds in general, we have Finnish hounds. We have a few different hound breeds here as well. Like it's not only that the plot hounds are the only hound we used, but they're being successful. Mm-hmm. Is that the cold trailing? Mm-hmm. Like Laika here is viewed like more hot nosed, but like I mean, we have my Laikas will easily take a 6 hour old track. It's not that, but if we're pushing 8, 10, 12 hours. And it's a long distance. They're not gonna be as locked in on the track. So, like, mm-hmm. if my dogs start trailing a wild boar, and then they get the wind scent of another wild boar, they're instantly gonna swap. Like, they're not locked into that trailing at all. Like, they're just looking to find the first accessible game to hunt. While hounds, at least here in a sense, is more like if you put them on a track, they're going to follow that track. It doesn't matter if a moose or another game crossed that track. They're more going to like follow that track to the end, at least if you mm-hmm. train them that way to like learn that I follow this track, it's going to be a reward in the end.
Yeah. Well, I know that our good friend Kirk Price has actually got Server.
Yeah, I know he loaned Sever from Alex, yeah. And he has a pup of
Sever. Yeah, he calls him Genghis, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Kirk posts the videos and stuff, but a lot of those videos, he's hunting just those two dogs.
Yeah, I think he's trying out the only Laika style a bit mm-hmm. as well to see if he likes it.
Yeah, so it's good. So he's incorporating it.
And I mean, the big benefit, now obviously I think, if you take two good bear hounds, they're probably going to do the work as well, right? I don't think you need 6 or 8 or, mm-hmm. as you said, 4. But like 2 Laikas is definitely going to get you on bears, mm-hmm. both here and on black bears in America. Like mm-hmm. even like very dedicated hound dog persons here will maybe have 3 to 4, maximum 5 dogs.
Yeah. And a food bill would be a lot cheaper, I can tell you that.
Yeah, the food bill would be cheaper. A big difference here is that our dog prices is like a lot more expensive than the American dog prices. Like mm-hmm. a well-bred dog here of any breed is at least $2,000 mm-hmm. at 8 weeks. Chew. That's like you get mm-hmm. a mixed breed for $1,500. Like, mm-hmm. yeah.
I mean, we need to up our game, don't we? Yeah. Well, Eric, I really appreciate it. Anything you want to leave us with?
No, I think you started it out very nicely. And I think that we pushed that as well. Like, it doesn't matter if I'm hunting here in Sweden with the dogs or in America. Like, or it doesn't even matter if you hunt with a bow or a muzzle loader. Like, in any country in the whole world, we're the lower number, right? We can't afford to be our own worst enemy by being against each other. Like, support your local hound guy, support your local bow hunter. Obviously, we're not always going to see eye to eye on everything, but like, we can't really afford to fight among each other as hunters. It doesn't matter if we're talking America, Europe, or Africa. Like, we're always going to be outnumbered.
Well, thank you for taking time out of your day, and we will catch you guys on the next What's Up Wednesday.
I saw this app.
I got a hit.
In the new limited series, DTF St. Louis, Jason Bateman, David Harbour, and Linda Cardellini star as three suburbanites who spice up their love lives.
Wow.
Don't miss the new HBO original limited series, DTF St. Louis, premiering March 1st on HBO Max.
Your little one grew 3 inches overnight. Adorable. Also, expensive. Sell their pint-sized pieces on Depop and list them in minutes with no selling fees. Because somewhere, a dad refuses to pay full price for the clothes his kids will outgrow tomorrow. And he's ready to buy your son's entire wardrobe right now. Consider your future growth spurt budget secured. Start selling on Depop, where taste recognizes taste. Payment processing fees and boosting fees still apply. See website for details.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.